You're listening to KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. It certainly seems like Arizona would be a haven for solar energy production and use, but recent conflicts among the state's utilities and some solar companies has industry observers saying Arizona's on the verge of falling behind. In the new book, Harness the Sun, America's Quest for a Solar-Powered Future, Philip Warburg writes about his personal experience with solar and its broader impact. Philip, thanks for joining us.
Great to be on your show.
So give us an idea about your personal experience. You know from personal experience what rooftop solar is like. How has it played a role in your life?
Well, in chilly, snowy New England, I'm from Massachusetts, we now have a solar array on our home that gets 75% of our power, and that includes the nightly charging of a plug-in electric vehicle. I think one thing that people don't always know is the somewhat counterintuitive fact that solar photovoltaics actually do better in colder weather. In Arizona, you certainly have superabundant sun, which more than makes up for the heat there. But we do just fine in New England as well.
Well, so what differences have you noticed? Because I think that would surprise a lot of people. Are there other differences you've noticed with your writing and your research that solar is used differently in different parts of the country? Again, our perception is that Arizona should be dominant in this, but of course, Oregon does quite well, and Oregon is not a place that is at nearly as sunny as Arizona is.
Well, solar has enormous potential really across the country. Arizona has about 327 times the current electricity use in solar potential, so that's pretty phenomenal. But then you look at a place like New Jersey, which ranks number three in the country in installed solar capacity. It's not exactly the sunniest state. It's a small state. It's an industrialized state. And what you see happening there is a lot of giant warehouse roofs, for example, provide a great opportunity for solar development. So you're switching off of fossil fuels in providing the power to those facilities. You see landfills across the country that are being converted to solar. Brownfield solar, as it's called, solar on contaminated or potentially contaminated properties, could be generating about three times our total power needs nationwide. We have a superabundant solar resource, and we can tap it in various ways in various parts of the country.
Do you envision a time, maybe in the near future, maybe the distant future, where traditional environmentalists and what we would label capitalists can work together to help the environment, so not using fossil fuels, not using them to the degree that we use them, but also using solar, using other alternative energy to create good, high-paying jobs?
This isn't some hypothetical about the future. This is today. There are about 174,000 jobs in the solar industry today, and we have capitalists, investors, home installers, and the like, manufacturers very actively engaged in the solar industry. It's an opportunity that is being taken advantage of, not because of its environmental virtues, but because people see it as the smart way to go, the economical way to go, and that will become more the case as we see fossil fuels face increasing regulation, which they should, regarding their greenhouse gas emissions. Solar is a very promising technology. And one of the interesting things for me, observing what has been going on in Arizona, is you have an interesting coalition of progressives who are very much renewable energy advocates and libertarians who are saying, we want solar on our rooftops and we want to be compensated appropriately for that solar power. That, to me, is a hopeful sign in a very fractious political era.
Hopeful sign. I would agree with you. It's interesting you bring up that point because there is the feeling here that, again, because it's Arizona, we wonder why people are fighting about it. There are some critics who've said that the utilities want to maintain some kind of monopoly and that that in some ways is driving away certain solar companies. From an economic perspective, are there going to be other states, you mentioned New Jersey, that take advantage of this? Or could you see other states having the same sort of utility versus private company fight we've seen here?
I think we're at a very profound transformational moment for electric utilities. They've been defining themselves really as generators of kilowatt hours that they then sell. If they're going to survive well into the 21st century, they're going to have to become energy services providers. And that's going to mean getting involved in providing storage. That's going to involve what's called demand response, where you're using the available electricity resources much more appropriately and time sensitively. And there are lots of opportunities for a much more flexible and resilient utility industry. And if the utilities just continue to see themselves as only generating electrons, they're going to be in trouble. I think they need to, you know, take a warning from the Kodak and Polaroid experiences and not recognizing the digital photography era when it was upon them. Utilities are going to have to adapt. And I think that's a huge opportunity and a wonderful opportunity, because we can diversify our energy resources and develop a more sustainable energy resource base. But we can only do so if the utility sector accommodates and adapts.
Philip, in our last couple of minutes, I want to make sure we touch on a couple of communities that may not be talked about quite as much, and that's Native American communities, which are very important here in Arizona, and lower income communities. Are we going to see expansion of solar among those communities, and what will it take?
Well, let's start with the Native American communities. I did visit a number of Native American communities in Arizona, and I would say the story there is a mixed one. First, I should say that on 2% of America's land, Native Americans have about 5% of the nation's solar potential. So that's good news. What's a little bit frustrating is that the progress within the Native American community so far has been really one of, I would say, fits and starts. The Moapa Paiute in Nevada are developing large-scale, utility-scale solar projects, actually selling their power to the L.A. Department of Water and Power. In Arizona, I visited the San Carlos Apache tribe. They were considering installing a solar array on their Apache Gold Casino, but as I understand it, they have since set that project aside. I spoke with people in the Gila River Indian community, and there was reference to the possibility of developing some solar, but there was certainly nothing explicitly on the table that they could at least share at that point. So I hope that we're just at the very beginning of a recognition within the Native American community of how important solar could be. And, you know, time will tell. And it's a very new industry, and caution is appropriate in communities that have scarce resources. But the Native American land resources are prodigious and really do provide a wonderful economic opportunity for them to, frankly, shift away from coal, which has been such a huge source of dependence for many Native American communities.
Philip,
in terms of low-income solar,
yes, please, California briefly.
Is really, sorry?
Briefly, please.
Yeah, California is really leading the way. It's devoting about $300 million to getting solar into low-income communities. That's a model that we should be following in other states. It's a very important way to reduce people's electric bills while trimming our greenhouse gas emissions.
The name of the book is Harness the Sun, America's Quest for a Solar-Powered Future. We've been talking with the author, Philip Warburg. We just scratched the surface, Philip, but thanks so much.
Thank you.